Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of my favorite one of my favorite people to have ever known, Brian Brown, who created the Brown Briefly. Together, we, the Brieflys, keep Brian's creative flame alive by bringing you every week another episode of intelligent discussion. At least we hope it's intelligent discussion, you know, sort of current events laced with humor and empathy, always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. So let me introduce the Brieflys and our guests. So in engineering the show from behind the board at the Voice of Vachon, Gene Bosch Broadcast Studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon is our intrepid pilot, Truman O'Brien. Good morning, Truman.
Hey, good morning, Bruce. I got the big red switch on here, but I'm looking for our other guest, and I don't see them on Zoom. Did you?
No, I sent her the link. All I had is a meeting number, and it's not letting her get into the meeting number, so I don't have the click-on link. So if you could send that to her.
I can try. I'll try. In the meantime, we'll soldier on here, and then I'll try and get it sent to her.
Welcome to our 2020 time machine, everyone.
Yes, here we are.
Are you on? Wait, you're muted. Hold on. Wait, what?
Are you on? Yes, that's the way it works.
Yeah, I'm feeling strong June 2020 vibes here.
Yeah. It's 2000, Y2K.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so moving along. Zooming in from his home here on Vachon above Burton is our political conscience, Kevin Jones. Good morning, Kevin.
Hey, that reminds me of myself. I'm good to be here on a sunny day on Vachon Island.
All right. And also joining us is our community fairy maven, Amy Dreyer, who we heard from briefly earlier. Amy, you here?
Good morning. I am. I'm here and unmuted.
Okay. I'm wondering, Amy, is it a maven or a mauven?
Mauven sounds maudlin. I'm gonna go maven or like crow. I don't know, raven, maven, crow. No,
I was thinking marvelous, but
marvelous.
I don't know. Yeah. Okay, well,
we are moving into Pride Month, so.
Okay, there we go. Oh,
good to have you here, Amy. Yes, seeing. Let's see, next to Truman in the studio is our distinguished legalista, which is a newly coined word for a legal genius, Craig Bellis.
Hey, how you doing, Bruce? I'm having a great day already on this beautiful morning. And it's 61 degrees, they say, outside, which is right in my wheelhouse. My very narrow temperature zone. That 83 or whatever we had the other day is just not working for me.
A little bit much. A little bit much. Dyed-in-the-wool Northwesterners.
Yep.
All right. Also joining us today are two of the curators of the Joy and Heartache Japanese Americans on Vachon exhibit at the Vachon Heritage Museum that we did in 2015-16. And also who are organizers of the May 19th Day of Exile ceremony coming up this weekend, which remembers the removal and exile of imprisonment of the Vachon Japanese American community that took place on May 16th, 1942. First joining us is Joe Okamoto, an American concentration camp survivor. Welcome, Joe.
Hi, Bruce. Thank you. I'm glad to be with you all.
Oh, great to have you here, Joe. And also joining us is Rita Brogan, who was the primary writer of the Joy and Heartache exhibit, sort of made sense out of everything and gave it one common voice, and also the former president of the Friends of Mukai. Welcome, Rita.
Hey, thanks a lot. Glad to be here.
All right. Good to have you. And I'm historian Bruce Hallman. It's our usual practice on the Briefly is to just take a moment and check in with everyone about the special things you experienced this past week. Amy, let's start with you.
Special. Well, I was right there with Craig sweating it out, not literally, but figuratively with the 83-degree heat. So I thought I would, you know, catch a wave and head down to Portland, which is warmer. But no, I had a great trip down to Portland visiting our southern sisters and got together with some old college friends, one of whom flew in from Boston. And I mean, our housing is terrible here, but she is in a housing lottery coming up. She works on the Harvard campus, and she's got a pretty good job, one which you might think would come with housing, but they are so tight there that she's waiting in a lottery to find out if she's going to have housing for her position there coming up. Right now, she is commuting from New York City to Boston.
Oh, my gosh.
Holy cow. Yes, yes. So don't head east, I guess, is my lesson for the weekend. Also, Portland is a beautiful city, and I'm always happy to visit there.
So, Amy, you see a housing lotto coming up for Vashon anytime soon?
I absolutely wouldn't count it out. I'm not talking about next year, but, you know, we got to be planful about 10, 20 some years down the road and what our community might look like. And we've just got to be planful.
Good thoughts. Good
planful.
Thoughts.
Planful.
I like that word.
I was going to say, did you coin that word, or is that common parlance now?
Is that another Brown Briefly sort of like, you know, words of the Brown Briefly?
Yeah.
So, Truman, how about you? How was your weekend?
Well, I'll tell you, to be perfectly honest, I had a pretty laid back, you know, putter around the house kind of weekend. However, I will say that that Craig and I found an airplane that we really wanted to buy, and we thought you guys would like to chip in. It's only $4.3 million.
I'm gonna start a GoFundMe.
Yeah, and you know we can come up with $50,000, I think, between us if you guys want to chip in the rest.
It's cheaper than a ferry.
It is a new ferry. Yeah, that's true, and a lot faster. So there you go.
How many islanders can fit on that thing?
Yeah, six actually.
And how do your wives think about this?
Oh, we haven't told.
Haven't
them.
Haven't told them. No, we just told them. We just told them now.
Yeah, just now.
Oh yeah. Breaking news.
Breaking news right here. Yeah.
Treetop Flyers. Have you heard any rumors about GI Shenanigans turning over into a airport essentially for Kenmore Air? The, you know, the Tacoma institution, is that true?
No, but they do have, there is a, they are landing there on the waterfront in Ruston. There is they're starting scheduled service from there. And I'm not sure if it's Shenanigans where it is, but it is on the Ruston waterfront. Yeah, for sure.
Just the pilots can't go into Shenanigans and
right, yeah.
drink.
And, well, it is under heavy construction over there. So
well, that may be, yeah, that may be part of what they're doing.
Very cool.
Well, that's part of, in conjunction with the Puyallup Tribe.
Correct.
The Puyallup Tribe is offering tours, aerial tours, you know, of the Tacoma waterfront and Commencement Bay and the tribal lands. And, you know, so I think that's that and Kenmore Air and are all working together on that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So, Kevin, how about you? How was your week?
Oh, you know, I enjoyed that hot 80-degree weather by going out for a 3-hour bike ride around Vashon and Maury Islands.
Boy.
That was pretty awesome. The good news is when you're on a bike, you know, you keep moving and therefore you cool off, right? So we were using a wind resistance to keep the temperatures down. But we also had a whole bunch of safety checks done on vessels down on the Quartermaster Yacht Club docks. We had folks from Power Squadron come on over and make sure that we have the right sticker in the window so you don't get boarded by the Coast Guard. Hmm. So that was awesome fun to make sure that was done. And this morning, I made the early row, and so I was out this morning about 6 o'clock on the water, hauling around on an oar with three good buddies, making the boat go fast. So that was a pretty sweet way to start the day.
Fantastic. Must have been gorgeous out there this morning.
It's very nice. Still is.
Still is, yeah. So, Rita, how about you? What has your past week been like?
Oh, it's been kind of busy, but the highlight was
I'm surprised none of you have mentioned this. Mother's Day. I had a wonderful Mother's Day. My daughter-in-law made dinner for us, and it was one of the few times I've had somebody else make dinner for me recently.
Always an enjoyable thing.
Yes.
Hey, Craig, how about you? What have you been up to?
Well, I was going to say the most important thing was Mother's Day.
Good cover.
Legally stuck.
For everybody else, I was going to say that as well. No, I didn't do much this last week myself. I did, during the heat, take a number of long hikes in the center forest with my doggy. She's a Rhodesian Ridgeback, so, you know, part Rhodesian Ridgeback. So the heat does not seem to bother her at all, as much as it bothered me on the 4-5 mile hikes I was taking. But other than that, I've sort of lived vicariously through my beautiful and talented cowgirl wife, who spent the last week in the Medow Valley like she does every year. This was her 25th. 2-5 ride to rendezvous on trails around the Medow Valley with, I don't know, about 100 to 125 other people, you know, between crew and the people that ride. And she loves it. It was beautiful weather, a new trail, great friends, super food, and all ended off with the Aurora Borealis. Mm. So it was a wonderful time, and it's always great to hear about that. She's incommunicado when she's there, so I have to wait until she gets home, which was just yesterday. Yeah. So that was my week.
Ah, good to have her back, I'm sure.
Yes, for sure.
Hey, Joe, how about you? What have you been up to?
Yeah. I guess, I'll echo the Mother's Day, events. We had a good, family gathering, celebrating Mother's Day. But the surprising conversation I had was last Friday, a Zoom conversation with a former dean of Asian American students at Dartmouth College, where I actually went to school in 1956. And she was one of the rare persons who understood instinctively what a foreign culture I experienced when I went back to New Hampshire. So that was a nice conversation.
That sounds like a really good conversation, Joe. I assume when you went to Dartmouth, there weren't a lot of Japanese Americans in your class.
Exactly.
Right. Although you came from the West Coast, right, from California, so it would have been a fair number of Japanese Americans in West Coast universities.
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Times do change, don't they?
Yeah.
All right. And I'm Bruce Hallman. You know, like the rest of you guys, great Mother's Day. We had all the kids and grandkids out. Beautiful weather. Got out to see bits and pieces of the Aurora Borealis as much as possible, which is fascinating to me. I have friends in Melbourne, Australia, and they got an incredible, you know, Australis Borealis in the Southern Hemisphere. Mm. You know, it sort of never clicked in my mind that when we see the Northern Lights, they see the Southern Lights at the same time. It's sort of like, well, it's a worldwide phenomenon. So they sent some just spectacular pictures of the aurora, the Southern Lights, sort of above Melbourne. So it was pretty spectacular. Yeah, Truman.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, I missed the Aurora Borealis this time. But I have to tell you that having flown in the Arctic in the wintertime, I have seen some spectacular Aurora Borealis. I mean, amazing stuff, just beyond belief. So I wasn't really too anxious to stay up until late to see the one that we had here. So.
You're just jaded. From
yeah,
right?
I guess so. I guess I am.
All right. Let's see. Today, like every day, is significant. We have 66 days until the start of Strawberry Festival. Amy, are you counting?
I am counting. I am counting down. It's pretty nailed down. I'm excited. I'm not sure who will be taking the helm at the chamber, but it's in great shape for the next leader.
Great.
So Strawberry Festival begins on July 19th.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah, so a great weekend planned. And it's 52 days until the Heritage Museum reopens on July 5th. So it's sort of like all hands on deck right now at the Heritage Museum. And interestingly enough, in 1796, the British physician Edward Jenner successfully inoculated an 8-year-old smallpox patient using material from a cowpox lesion. And the word vaccine, of course, comes from that, and it's derived from the Latin word for cow, or vaca, which is an interesting sort of etymology. I never had thought of that, but so we can thank vaccines back to Edward Jenner. And today is National Buttermilk Biscuit Day.
Speaking of cows.
Biscuits, right? Yes. It's also National Dance Like a Chicken Day.
So. that one really gets
can
me.
I see just tell get up a really like fun story? I do. I have one fun story. One okay. of my favorite things that ever happened to me was I did have the opportunity to plan an election tour for Gloria Steinem back in my glorious youth. And I remember at the Milwaukee stop, you know, it's like you always come in the back, right? You always, you know, go through the ugliest entrances, and she, you know, I'm there waiting on the loading dock for her, and she pulled up, the car pulled up, and she got out with her husband, and you know, I was, how's it going, Gloria, you know, blah blah blah, and she's like, you know, I'm just feeling great today, and just busts out in the chicken dance. Like, just there she is, the back loading dock at the University of Wisconsin Milwaukee, Gloria Steinem just doing the chicken dance for just joy. I mean, it's something you never forget.
Yeah, yep. I would think.
Yeah.
Only thing
yeah.
more appropriate would have been a polka.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? I can say that, right? Being born in Milwaukee.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. No, every time someone says a chicken dance, I just get this think great image in my head.
That's great.
Yeah. So, Rita, you worked something with Gloria Steinem.
Yes.
There, right? Yeah.
Yes. I was an appointee by President Jimmy Carter to the National Commission for Women. And I like to say I was the token non-celebrity on the commission. Bella Abzug was chair, and Gloria was part of it. Coretta Scott King, LaDonna Harris, Maya Angelou. I mean, it was a pretty amazing group of folks. But Gloria was just a wonderful, wonderful person to work with. And I really learned so much from her. She really had a great influence on my leadership approach.
Mm-hmm. She's not like the rest of us. Mm-mm. She's just not. No. She's something different.
Well, it sounds like we need to get Amy and Rita together at some point.
Yeah, that'd be
sure.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. Some good old days tales. I don't know though. That's amazing. I want to hear your stories, Rita.
There's a lot.
Sounds like a Brown Briefly day.
It does
indeed.
All right, today is also National Decency Day, which to me is a bit of a segue into our small talk guests with Joe and Rita. So welcome to the Briefly, and thank you for joining us. And you know, the nature of decency is just being, you know, decent to one another. And you both have experiences that have been different than that. So let's start, Joe, with you, and tell us a little bit about yourself. What brought you to Vashon, and why are you here?
Okay, well, to start with, I'm the son of immigrant parents who came to America in 1937 as Christian missionaries to minister to Japanese immigrants on the West Coast. They landed in California and were assigned a parish in San Diego. So I essentially grew up in California and am a transplant here in the Northwest since 1969. I first came to Seattle to intern at Harborview Hospital, and after a couple of years in the military, I returned and underwent psychiatric training and had a practice, private practice, in Seattle in psychiatry. And my wife and I began coming to Vashon to get away from the city. And of course, we loved Vashon and the culture and the relaxation. And our time on Vashon increasingly grew, and to the point where in 2004 we moved permanently. So we've been here for 20 years and really enjoy Vashon.
And where do you live on Vashon, too?
On Pole Road, right near the Tahlequah Ferry.
So a South Ender, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tried and true South Ender, right? Yeah.
Down there in Dixie.
Yeah.
Below the Mason-Dixon
line. That's right.
That's another whole story we need to bring up some point on the briefly.
So, Joe, you know, I'm a former friend of Mary Matsuda Grunewald, and so I know her story pretty well about what happened to her family and subsequently her and her brother, their experiences after their internment. And so I'm wondering, can you tell us about your particular experiences with the exile and the internment?
Yeah. I was the first child in my family born on American soil. I have two older siblings who were born in Tokyo, and so I was the first American citizen. And when the war broke out, we were in San Diego, and the roundup of Japanese Americans occurred in our area in middle of April. But our family was quarantined because of, I can't remember whether it was measles or chicken pox or whatever. But so we didn't get arrested until May 1st, when the army sent a single truck with soldiers, rifles, and bayonets, and so forth, to take us to the temporary prison camp at Santa Anita Racetrack, which housed about 8,000 inmates at any given time. My mother was 6 months pregnant, and with our younger brother, and she delivered, fortunately, normally, but under the conditions of a concentration camp. 2 weeks later, they put us on a train and shipped us to the desert of Arizona on an Indian reservation where they had built permanent concentration camp for close to 18,000 of us. It was obviously the climate of the desert was very harsh, frequent sandstorms, temperature raising from freezing to 115 degrees in the summer, a very primitive life behind barbed wires. And we spent almost 3.5 years in captivity. And we were released in September 1945 and returned to San Diego. Our father resumed his ministerial role at the church. So,
Joe, how old were you when that occurred?
I was 3, just shy of 4 years old.
So do you remember the soldier showing up at your house? Do you remember that?
I remember, you know, I think my 4-year-old brain couldn't tolerate the trauma, and I have very few memories. What I know about our family history is from my older sister, who was a couple of years older, and she remembers everything about what happened.
And so do you remember the camp, though, after, I mean, since you were there three and a half years or so, do you remember being in the camp itself?
I'm sorry, I had trouble hearing that.
Yeah, do you remember being in the camp itself? Do you remember that part?
I have childlike images, and, you know, like I had my tonsils out, and I recall the ether mask coming down over my face and the doctor saying, take a deep breath, and then waking up with a sore throat, and a few memories of playing with my sister, that kind of thing. But I don't have much memory at all of those 3 years.
Okay, thanks.
So, Joe, let me just jump in here a second, then Kevin. So you were born in the U.S., so you're an American citizen, but that did not make any difference in terms of arrested in prison, did it?
Right. In fact, I think two-thirds of the 120,000 Japanese Americans were citizens.
Kevin, you had a question?
Well, I wanted to say thanks, Joe, for recounting that. You know, there's many times in the last 8 years that I think we reflect on, well, yeah, this is the country we're in. But I see that sentiment is not new, not recent. So, but thank you for sharing that. Rita, it would be great to hear about your story of how you arrived at Vashon and a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, I was born in post-war Japan in Tokyo. My father was an American GI, coming right at the time between the end of World War II and the beginning of the Korean War. And my mother was one of many Tokyo residents struggling to survive post-war occupation. So I'm considered a Hapa. Half Japanese, half Irish. I'm one of the sort of early generations of Hapas in America. We moved to the U.S. when I was 3 months old. Both of my parents were disowned by their fathers because of the racial issues, which were then still, you know, very, very front of mind. My parents had to jump through many, many hoops just to get the U.S. government to allow them to marry each other in Japan. My birth certificate lists my race as M-O-N-G, period, Hmong, whatever that means. When we came to the U.S., we moved to Virginia only to confront Jim Crow laws. Interracial marriage was still illegal, but everybody kept telling us that they didn't really mean Japanese. And then my mother was confused about what bathroom to go to. And was told by the African American women in the bathroom that she was allowed to use the white women's bathroom. So I grew up an Army brat. We moved almost every year. Long and short of it is I was always the sort of almost Japanese kid. I did experience quite a bit of racism and sexism growing up, but I was also raised to embrace my father's patriotism and reverence for the ideals of America. So ironically, therefore, while he was serving in Vietnam, I became a very active anti-war and civil rights activist. And that has always been my life's calling. moved to Seattle when I was 19, became very involved in equity issues, served as chair of the Washington State Women's Council, was appointed by Jimmy Carter to the National Commission for Women, and spent about 20 years in the public sector and another 25 building my own communications company. We moved to Vashon in, I think, about 93 because of the schools and because I have a son with Asperger's. And he had a very, very good experience with Vashon Public Schools.
You know, Rita, I have a quick question. You know, I had the opportunity many years ago to work at Fort Lewis with the military dependent kids. Mm-hmm. And I found them to be incredibly resilient and outgoing. And the reason, because they had to form whole new relationships, you know, every 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, do you think that experience affected the way you approach all kinds of things this today?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, I would say that the reason they call us Army brats is because not everybody was as socially skilled as others. For me, I think it gave me a sense of perspective.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
But it was so great moving to Vashon. I got to meet Bruce and Joe and Meredith. We worked on the Joy and Heartache exhibit, and that immediately got me plugged into my current life's work, which is to reclaim the history of the Nikkei community on Vashon Island.
Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce. So Rita, mother's heritage is half Italian, half Irish.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she was second generation American, although I'm not exactly sure what the timeline was. And, you know, when the Italians were brought to this country, they were promised farms and they ended up in coal mines and black diamond, you know, just rural mm-hmm. black diamond. And you mentioned, equity work. I'm curious what your perspective is today on the state of, say, acceptance and inclusion for folks who have a multiracial, multicultural background.
Mm-hmm.
What's your view of, you know, now versus then? And are we on a trend that is encouraging, or do we still see substantial concerns?
Well, you know, as is abundantly clear, racism has not been erased from America's bag of tricks. And we still are, as a country and as individuals, involved in many ways that are racially and gender biased. That's just what it is. But it would be very wrong to say that there hasn't been great progress since that time. Back when I was a little girl, I remember being taunted frequently, you know, Ching Chong Chinaman sitting on a fence, that sort of thing. And I kept saying, but I'm not Chinese, I'm Japanese, as if that would make a difference. We were not allowed into certain schools that my father applied to, and I was informed by some well-meaning adults that I was clearly adopted because they couldn't understand why my last name was Brogan. As a teenager, I think the issues were really more of a combination of race and sex discrimination, because young men, especially at that point in America, had very strange ideas about Asian women. And And I was told that I could only be good at certain things. So one of the things that I kept being complimented on was my English. And I thought, okay, well, just saying, I think I'm better at it than you are.
I was going to go there.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I appreciate your perspective, Rita. Thank you.
Craig.
Yeah, Ohio, because I'm a... I have to say, just before I ask you another question, Rita, this is a subject that was an epiphany for me when I first went to undergraduate school at the University of California in 1967. I took a course in California history, and the professor was enlightened enough to assign a book entitled America's Concentration Camps. I have to say, it was one of the motivating factors for my going into the law, the practice of law, the injustice, the unfairness. It just struck at the heart, at my heart. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate everything that that you and Joe are doing, as well as Bruce and the others who are involved in this. Let me ask you about this Joy and Heartache exhibit that you just referenced a moment ago at the Vashon Heritage Museum. What is it, and what did you learn from the experience of working on that?
Gosh, I learned so much. For one thing, I didn't realize that there was a thriving Japanese community on Vashon Island before World War II. And I think a lot of people living on Vashon, hopefully it's changed in the last 10 years or so, but I think before the Joy and Heartache exhibit, I think a lot of people didn't really have a sense of how significant the Japanese presence was on Vashon after World War II. There were 30 Japanese farms that we know of up until the exclusion. There are school pictures we have, in which more than half of the children are Japanese.
Can I just throw in real quick, Rita? You know that Mary Matsuda, her family, I think they homesteaded here in like 1929, I believe is when they first came. It may have been 34, but I think it was 29. And so they were here for a long time before, the war and all of that happened. So.
Yes. And so there was a Japanese civic club. Mm-hmm. The children were very integrated into Vashon public schools. There are many instances that showed the mutual respect that people of Vashon many of whom ultimately were born on Vashon, had for each other. We hear lots of stories of terrible racism against not just Japanese, but other people of color. There was some on Vashon, but not nearly the way it was in other parts of the country and other parts of Washington State.
Absolutely.
And I can jump in. I think Rita and I have been doing a lot of work on this. And part of it was that the Japanese on Vashon, over 95% of them were farmers. And they were working like the rest of the farmers on, the white and the other farmers, immigrant farmers from Norway and other parts. And so there was that sort of camaraderie, if you will, almost, of farmers recognizing hard work being farmers. So I think it broke down some of those kinds of initial racial tensions in a place like Vashon. And it is very important that it was a community, the larger Vashon community, and then within it, the Japanese American community.
Joe, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your experience with the Joy and Heartache exhibit and kind of contextualize that, you know, in thinking about this experience of being in concentration camps and sort of the trauma that's carried forward. I've had the opportunity to visit the Manzanar site twice. And each time I breathtaking isn't the word, but it kind of is the word. Breathtaking. And I would encourage anyone to make sure that if you have any chance at all to visit a site, that you do so. I think it's an act of understanding that we can all give. And I am struck as you talk about, you know, what it was like to be in the camp and, you know, the very extreme conditions and sort of your family's experience coming back and coming out of the camps and your experience with the Joy and Heartache exhibit and how that felt and how it feels to do, you know, the work of education.
Yeah, like Rita, I think I appreciated and enjoyed learning about the Japanese experience on Vashon. And I think one of the benefits for the Japanese community is the restoration of pride in the history and the story. Because coming out of the camp, I think for a long time, there was shame associated with the trauma. Like when we returned to San Diego, we obviously attended public schools, and initially we were chased home by the white kids called the Japs and rocks being thrown at us. Fortunately, we lived next door to an African-American family, and they had kids my older siblings' age, and they came to our defense. So that was helpful. But Bruce and Alice Larson were doing this research on the Japanese Presence Project, and I was invited to join them. And that ultimately led to the Joy and Heartache exhibit. And so it was a labor of love, really, to be part of that effort, and continues to be for me, because I think one of the important aspects of racism is the ignorance of the larger population, ignorance of the history of in people of color, and so much of what we've experienced is not told in our educational system, and I think it needs to be. And what we're doing is trying to provide that, some of that effort to educate the larger society. So
I feel so fortunate to have grown up on Vashon, where there was some awareness. You know, the concentration camps were in our curriculum. Frank Matsumoto came and spoke a couple times at the school about his experience, and I'm curious sort of where you find that in your identity. You know, we sort of, you know, Frank was just an island guy who I always knew. And then, you know, he showed up in the school one day to talk about his experience. And it was jarring for me. And I'm curious for you, Joe, Rita, sort of as you think about your identity, you know, where does this sort of survivor or your trauma experiences sit? Is it something you think about often, or where does it sit with you?
Joe, you want to go first?
Yeah. Either way, it's all right.
Go ahead, Joe.
Beauty before age.
Okay, whatever. Well, I would say that my racial identity is never absent from my brain. There's part of it is because the way the world treats me, but part of it is also how I have chosen to be in the world. Because of the work that we've been doing at Mukai, and really renovating that property and doing a number of programs that focus on culture, food, history, politics. We're really working hard. Only 30% of Japanese came back after World War II to Vashon. And what we're doing now, I think, is rebuilding a new kind of community that bridges both culture and time. We are connecting with each other in a way, you know, whether you're Japanese or half Japanese or not Japanese, it's all part of our common heritage and history on Vashon. Yes, there's trauma. I would say much of the trauma for me is inherited trauma from my mother's own experiences during World War II and in trying to survive after World War II. My personal trauma doesn't even come close.
I had an interesting experience in February where I was asked to speak at a day of remembrance at Dartmouth Medical School, where I had attended back in the late 50s and early 60s. And related to the question about identity, because what I essentially did was talk about my experience and the story of our incarceration. And in the audience were some members of my class. And I realized as I talked about afterwards, I realized that I had never spoken about my story and with my classmates. They didn't know this part of me. And so this was the first time, and here we are in our 80s. And, you know, we were good friends then and continued to be, but because of the trauma and the shame associated with it, I didn't feel free to share that part of my life with them. It is an important part of my identity, but the times and the circumstances, I wasn't ready to reveal until now. So it is a growing experience, I think, for us to be involved in the community.
There's a very interesting book by, he's gone now, journalist Bob Hasegawa called The Quiet American, about Nisei. And, you know, talking about how the Japanese experience after World War II was to try to become as American as one could be, more American than American. And in many ways that resulted, I think, in even more repression and trauma with the Vietnam War, with the political activism of the 60s and the 70s, with Black power, Chicano power, Asian power, there became much more of an acceptance. And it was only then that people started speaking more openly about their experience in the camps, because it was before that you'd hear about camps from, you know, I'd hear about it from my friends' parents, but they made it sound like summer camp. it was only in recent years that the reality of that trauma really, I think, has become better known.
Mm-hmm. It's transformational to bring your whole self to your community. Yeah. And I do want to make sure as we speak about community here and the Mukai community, I know that the Day of Exile commemoration is coming up, and that's such a critical piece. I myself was, again, taken aback sort of to think about standing in Ober Park and, you know, how we concentrated people there as a staging place and, you know, changes my relationship with that space. So, Rita, can you talk a little bit more about the Day of Exile coming up?
Yeah, May 19th, right? Yeah, yeah. May 19th. Sunday, May 19th at 2 o'clock will mark the 82nd anniversary of the forced expulsion of persons of Japanese ancestry from their homes on Vashon. The actual date, I believe, Bruce, correct me, May 16th.
May 16th.
May 16th. Yeah. So tomorrow is the actual anniversary. But we will be doing a ceremony. It is the spot where 111 Vashon Japanese residents were rounded up to be deported as directed by Executive Order 8066. And we're going to have a really nice program. I hope everybody can come out. In addition to some poetry, in addition to the ringing of the bell that will be performed by Koshin Kane with the Puget Sound Zen Center, we have the excerpts of interviews with people who were teenagers at the time of exile. And so our plan is to have teenagers, modern day teenagers, read the words of their predecessors. And Mia Sukune artist is going to be making a presentation in the library of her recent graphic novel called Searching for Saito. And the Vashon Libraries has put together a special exhibit of books that are related to removal and internment of Japanese Americans. So I think it'll be really, really interesting and moving.
Wonderful. So that's Sunday, this Sunday, May 19th at 2 o'clock at Ober Park.
Yes.
And the public is invited. And is there anywhere Absolutely. They can learn more about this, or just sort of keep tuned to Mukai socials?
Yeah, keep tuned to Mukai socials. We do have a newsletter, and it's in there. We will post something on our website if it isn't already. But you know where Ober Park is? Show up at 2 o'clock. Sunday.
Craig.
Yeah, Rita, in addition to the memorial that you're having on May 19th at Ober Park, is it my understanding you would tend to have something more permanent in terms of a memorial project that's envisioned for Ober Park?
Right. We've been dreaming about this for a few years, and we're right now in the process of putting together a steering committee. We will be kicking off a campaign to design and fabricate a permanent art installation at Ober Park to commemorate the May roundup of our Japanese community. So several Vashon organizations have come together, including the History Museum, the Parks District, the Library, and Vashon Public Schools to figure out what sort of installation we should have, how much money we think we'll be able to raise. And I'm hoping that by next year, we'll have a new Nikkei exclusion memorial at Oberpark.
Sounds great.
Yeah, you know, I was a park commissioner when we did the Vietnam Memorial. And it takes a person or a group of people to spearhead that, to make it happen. But boy, I really encourage you to do that. That is a wonderful idea, I think.
Yeah, just to give you a little context on that May 16th, 1942 exile was on a Saturday. And Vachon didn't get notice until the Tuesday before, when placards were placed all around the island announcing that on Thursday, every Japanese family had to send a representative to Oberpark, which was then the community club, to be registered and to get a family number. And then on Saturday, army trucks with armed soldiers rounded people up, drove to farms, delivered everybody to Oberpark, drove to the North End Ferry. There was a special ferry that picked them up, took the Japanese to downtown Seattle, put them on a train, and they ended up 3 days later in California in a temporary camp, and then moved to Tule Lake as a permanent prison. And then from Tule Lake, were actually dispersed to 7 of the 9 other concentration camps. So it really shattered the Vashon Japanese community. Yeah, Truman.
Yeah, Bruce, the question that I was hoping that Joe would remember, what I'm wondering about is, how did the soldiers treat the people that they were picking up? Were they kind to them? Were they threatening? Do you know? Do you have any idea about that?
I don't know, but my sister recalls being terrified by the soldiers that came to our house. She vividly remembers the bayonet on the end of the rifle. But other than that, I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There have been a number of interviews with Nikkei about their experience, and one of them is one of the folks who was evacuated from Vashon was Eddie Owada. And he had a really interesting story, because his mother had left the three sons years before. They moved to Vashon, and then they took away his father. So at the age of 15, he had to quit school to raise money to feed his brothers, and then the three of them were taken to Pine Lake. He was 15.
Wow.
Kevin?
I just wanted to say, Rita, particularly, well, both Joe, of course, we had a chance to meet at a remembrance ceremony some years ago now, so good to see you again here as well. Rita, I wanted to just thank both of you for your willingness to share your experiences, you know, to raise awareness. Rita, and something that you said is just what I wrote down is, people did not see us. And the work that is now being done. So I'm motivated to do the work on the community council. I chaired the equity committee. And what I tell people about the outreach we're doing is it's important that our community sees all of us. And so thank you for just helping to raise the awareness that even today, right, we are not all seen. And anybody who's out and about on Vashon today can maybe raise their awareness about really who we all are, so that we can recognize our community and the people who constitute it and the values that they bring. So thank you so much for really sharing with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Wow. Yeah. Right, we're down to about the last minute here. Joe, Rita, any parting words for folks?
Just thank you for this opportunity to speak out.
And what I would like to do is remind everyone that we are all community, we are all together, and we would be honored to have you attend the ceremony on May 19th at 2 o'clock at Ober Park to celebrate the lives and memory of those who were unjustly incarcerated.
Great. Thank you. And echoing what Kevin said, we just appreciate Joe, Rita, both of you taking the time to join us to share your stories. So for Joe, Rita, Meredith, Amy, Kevin, Craig, Truman, and me, thank you very much for joining the Briefleys. Craig, you got a quick minute about next week?
Just very briefly, MJ Witt, the new head of our local Vashon CERT, Community Emergency Response Team. We're going to be talking about the purposes of CERT, training, how to join. And I want to re-echo what everybody else has said. Thank you very much, Rita and Joe, for sharing this with me. Domo arigato gozaimashita.
All right. See you all next week.